So why do I give a damn about girls and women? You know, a man molested me for the first time that I remember when I was 7 years old, and he felt entitled to my little body. And I say remember because I was then attacked by a man in a store when I had on my green and gold cheerleading uniform in the eighth grade, and who knows for what nefarious purpose, but I don't remember that, even though he is still a registered sex offender in Tennessee. So this is personal for me. And, you know, feminism has taught me that the personal is political. And I find purpose and meaning in standing up for girls and women and disrupting male entitlement to female bodies, because none of us are free until all of us are free.
As we talk about reproductive rights and women's rights, there's a lot of focus on SDG 5. How do we convince folks that this is really a holistic situation, that we need to be thinking about all SDGs together to provide women with better conditions?
Well, I really appreciate the question about SDG 5 and how it inheres in the success of all the other sustainable development goals. Because if we want to alleviate poverty, if we want to access education, if we want to respond to climate crisis, if we want to take a look at life on land and in the water, we have to let women plan and space the births of their children and have meaningful input as to how many children they have in the first place. Because a woman's body that is broken by so many repetitive pregnancies, which are unintended in the developing world, 257 million women do not have access to family planning and are not using a method. And that's a lot of women. It's a quarter of a billion women. And so how can we unleash our potential as a species if half of the population isn't entitled to its equality? So the SDG 5, and in particular 5.61, are really important to me because girls and women's sexual and reproductive health is the basic building block. It's the DNA of a thriving population.
So thinking about equity in the workplace, what are some of those best practices that you've seen traveling across so many different countries that we can provide folks with?
So in talking about equity in the workplace, first we have to talk about men's behavior, because this is the up with which we can no longer put, and it is the whence from which the need for equity comes. And so first and foremost, men need to be incentivized and understood and supported as they change their behavior. And there are evidence-based programs that help do this, you know, how to turn a bystander into a disruptor and an upstander. And, you know, educating men about norms and women's bodily autonomy and integrity and boundaries and personal space. So there's that, right? And then also I think there's such a thing as institutional courage, because so often we've experienced institutional betrayal where a woman does experience sexual harassment in the workplace. She reports and then she's shut down. She's fired, like a friend of mine just recently in Franklin, Tennessee, you know, retaliated against, asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which really protects the perpetrator. And so what we need instead is this institutional courage where the systems respond appropriately and have the decency to understand that there's no place for male aggression in the workplace, that we constrain our bottom line when we allow it to proliferate, and support girls and women in ways that are responsive to their need to be heard, witnessed, validated, and make sure that they are instated as full employees in every workplace.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So it's been over 20 countries, a lot of traveling. And what are some of the regions that have been suffering the most? I know it sounds like folks already know, but it's always important to highlight and to bring, you know, to really bring that to light and to have this conversation.
You know, human suffering is human suffering, and it's not a contest or a competition amongst those who are experiencing the unendurable. And what I think does happen in our climate and in the, you know, outrage media industrial complex is that we focus on a couple of places and forget that people in Mali, that people in Syria, that people in Yemen, that people in Mexico and Colombia, that people in Nigeria, of course, throughout the Democratic Republic of Congo, particularly in the East, are still suffering with unrest, with insurgency, with conflict, and that all of these lives are precious and matter. And so I'm really quite egalitarian when it comes to talking about suffering. You know, and UNFPA has trusted me to travel a lot, and you know, there are 150 countries around the world. I don't know if I can make all of them, but I'll certainly do my best wherever I'm welcomed.
Excellent. So what should decision makers be focusing on as we think about the next 7 years based on our 2030 goals?
I think decision makers really do need to be focused on the reproductive health of girls and women, and knowing that whether it's pressure on the climate because folks can't plan in space the births of their children and decide how many children to have, whether it's women not being educated because they're in these back-breaking cycles of pregnancies, or they can't participate in the informal economy because they're struggling to care for all the children they already have, many of whom may be sick and don't have access to appropriate health care, that this is the essential building block of sustainable development. Reproductive health, and knowing that girls and women have the right to reproductive justice as well and to be free from male sexual violence.
Could you please leave us a message of encouragement when we think about the younger generations of women watching this today?
So I love visiting with young people, and I love it when folks approach me and we have the chance to interact and share a little bit of our experience, strength, and hope. And my message to young people is, know that you have a voice. Access it and use it. You know, whether you speak up when you're walking down the street and you are experiencing sexual harassment on the street or in the workplace or in your communities, at the kitchen table, in public transportation, in the bedroom, find and use your voice and have female alliances around you so that when you do experience that pushback or a little bit of that retaliation or that, you know, who does she's uppity. You have other women around you to encourage and bolster you so that you can maintain the courage of using your voice.